The farmers are hitting the fields as we speak, working to get their soil ready and the crops in the ground. In other words, it's springtime in western Wisconsin. So this hour, we'll get an agriculture update from experts and representatives of Wisconsin's two largest farmer advocacy groups during the West Side. But first on deck, we're going to hear about the outbreak of a strain of bird flu that is causing quite a lot of havoc at turkey farms in Barron and Chippewa County. It's led to the destruction of hundreds of thousands of birds. We're going to speak with the state veterinarian first. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to introduce my guests this hour. They are state veterinarian Dr. Paul McGraw. He joins us by phone from Madison. Dr. McGraw, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be on.
And also joining us, we've got the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union Board of Directors, Darren Von Ruden. Darren, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
President of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, Jim Holt. Thanks for being here, Jim.
Good morning, Rich.
And UW Extension Ag Agent for Chippewa and Eau Claire Counties, Jerry Clark. Jerry, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Dr. McGraw, could you give us a quick rundown of, we've heard of bird flu before. What's different about this strain that's popping up in Wisconsin?
So this is it's a H5, highly pathogenic avian influenza, and it's the first time this virus has been found in the United States. Started out in the West Coast around December, and it's been the term highly pathogenic means that it's very fatal to birds.
And so the West Coast, is that where it comes from, or is this something that comes from? Sometimes when I hear bird flu, I think of Asian countries, China or Japan or something like that.
Well, this influenza virus actually has been in Asia and Europe for the last several years. And so there's suspicious that maybe the birds, the migratory birds, commingled at the poles during the off season and got exposed. And so now the virus has moved up. It's been found in the Pacific Flyway, the Central Flyway, and now the Mississippi Flyway.
So, what birds are carrying this thing and spreading it throughout the U.S. and throughout Wisconsin?
Suspect wild waterfowl, probably ducks and geese.
Okay. And it seems like, at least in this neck of the woods in western Wisconsin, it's had more of an impact on turkey farms than on chicken farms, but I imagine that farms that raise chickens have been dealing with this as well. Is it more suited to turkeys at all?
Well, we thought that's what we were seeing, and Minnesota certainly has had a lot more turkeys, but as of late, we're seeing it in some egg layers, both in Iowa and Wisconsin, too.
And how come the birds, how come they all have to be destroyed when you find one sick bird?
Well, for one problem with this virus is it actually will kill a lot of the birds itself, and we humanely euthanize them as rapidly as we can. And it also is part of our trade negotiations that USDA does with other countries. In order to control this virus, we need to depopulate the flocks and make sure we don't spread it.
All right. And after a farm has been depopulated and the birds have been killed, how long does the farmer have to wait until they can get another crop of birds?
Well, we're still working through that. A lot of these carcasses are being composted on site, and that'll take likely a month. And then depending on the facility, to clean and disinfect the barn is, an egg layer. That's going to be very time-consuming to get that done right. So we're probably looking at not repopulating these until we get into some consistently warm weather for sure. But we'll be over a month probably in Wisconsin before we start looking at that.
And speaking of warm weather, I've read that the warmer weather does not bode well for this strain. Is this going to be gone by summer, do we think?
We expect that as we get more heat and sunshine, that the virus won't survive in the environment as long. So even if it was spread throughout the state, we expect that warm weather will be hard on the virus, so it won't be available to be carried into barns.
And what is the State Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection doing to stop the spread of this? We could only book you for about 5 minutes on this program. I imagine you're very busy. So what kind of things are you guys up to?
Well, education and outreach, certainly to our producers. Everyone tighten down the biosecurity. Don't, be conscious of if there are wild birds around or you're near a marsh or wetland. Try to keep those areas away from your domestic poultry. Be careful, don't share equipment, those kind of things. If we've even stopped exhibitions and swap meets in the counties that we know we have affected flocks.
And the bans on moving poultry will end at the end of May. Is that because we expect that the warmer temps will be more detrimental to the virus?
Right. We hope that we don't have any new cases here. We hope they stop pretty shortly.
And now a question, I guess, that you've probably heard 100 times or more. Can it be? Is this harmful to people? Can people catch this thing?
There has been no documentation that this virus has caused any human disease at all. And it's been floating around quite a while, and so we've not seen any issues with human disease. And certainly poultry and poultry products are safe to eat, you know, as usual, cook your food appropriately.
And how many birds have been affected in Wisconsin? We're talking something like 7 counties, right?
Well, in Wisconsin, I think we're only in 4 counties.
Okay.
We are going to be reporting out our 9th and 10th flock this morning, total. But they've all been mostly in the 2 counties, Barron and Jefferson County. So I'm not sure the total number of birds, but I think we'll be over 1 million before we're done.
Yeah, supposedly. Well, I've got a release from DADCAP, and it was at 1.4 million total.
Okay.
In Wisconsin. These 9th and 10th flocks, can you tell us where those were?
One in Barron, another turkey flock, and then another one egg layer in Jefferson County.
Wow. All right, well, Dr. Paul McGraw, thank you so much. Guests, Jerry, Darren, and Jim, anything for Dr. McGraw?
Well, it's clearly a problem for the farmers. Oftentimes, the farmers don't actually own the birds, but it really interrupts their flow of income, and it changes the way they have to act for a long time. So it's devastating for both the farmers and the owners of the birds, the companies.
Definitely. Well, Dr. McGraw, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Paul McGraw is the state veterinarian for Wisconsin. Thank you.
Very welcome.
And listeners, you can get in on this conversation. The number is 1-800-228-5615 to ask a question or pose a comment to our guests. We have UW Extension Ag Agent for Chippewa and Eau Claire Counties. Jerry Clark is with us, President of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Jim Holt is here, and President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union Board of Directors, Darren Von Ruden, is here as well. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. So, Jerry Clark, the turkey industry, when I first moved to this area, it really surprised me how big of a deal that is up in the Barron, Chippewa County areas. Something like this has got to be pretty scary for those people.
Yeah, I think that's where we've started to see the impact of a large larger operations where we have a number of birds in a close geographic area. So when we seen this starting to break, especially in Barron, we assumed it was probably going to show up in Chippewa just because of the proximity of a lot of the birds. But biosecurity is still the number one thing. They've done a great job, I think, of keeping it confined to the barns that it's in. So the commercial growers are definitely doing a great job of trying to keep it in place, at least in the 2 counties. And again, in Chippewa County, it's mainly northern Chippewa County. But the concern that we've been hearing from some of the residents are the backyard owners of flocks. This is the time of year a lot of backyard chicken raisers will get 50 to 100 birds and put them in their backyard and raise them for meat or maybe have a few layers of their own. And so that's where we're starting to get those kind of questions is, will this affect my backyard flock? And typically it's not going to be an issue with the backyard owner simply because it's not as airborne. It isn't transferred through the air very easily. It's mainly through, again, manure on boots or vehicles or clothing or workers moving from barn to barn, that kind of thing is probably where it's being moved the most. And so having a flock within a backyard flock or a small flock in an area, unless they're in very close proximity to these other barns and there's vehicles or workers coming onto the property, it's probably a pretty good chance it's not going to be transferred to these backyard flocks very easily.
All right. And so spread by manure, so how does it go from bird to bird within the the facility? Would it be from sharing the feeding area?
Yeah, just direct contact. Yeah, it can be saliva as easily as, you know, moving against the birds. But any time they're in, especially manure, is probably going to be the place where it's going to move around a little bit. But, yeah, just direct contact of the birds themselves is where it's probably going to move the quickest.
I'm just curious, the Farmers Union Farm Bureau Federation, Darren Von Ruden, do you guys represent chicken, turkey farmers, or is it just mostly, say, grain and dairy?
You know, I guess we represent all farmers. Sure. You know, we have some folks that are the backyard chicken growers, some that have more commercial livestock operations, things like that. So, you know, it's one of those things that we're trying to keep an eye on and see what's happening. And I know a few of the dairy plants in the state of Wisconsin, too, have sent out letters to their members asking them to keep their poultry and stuff out of their dairy barns, too, so that we don't have those issues. You know, it's not supposed to be taken between animals and things like that, but it's always a concern. You know, if we can avoid further contamination, we should certainly look at that.
And Jim Holtz of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, you mentioned the impact that would have not only on the owners of the birds, but also on the folks that are raising them. So is this a situation where sometimes you've got birds maybe owned by a genio that are being raised by a contractor? Is that what you're saying?
Oftentimes the farmer that has both a facility and care gives the care to the animals doesn't necessarily own the large flocks. Mm-hmm. But it is a very important source of income for them, income. And so if they're in this tough situation where they have to depopulate, it really creates a hardship for them as well.
Yeah, if you lose all your birds, are there insurance? Do they have, these farmers have insurance on this kind of thing, Darren?
Yeah, there is indemnity programs that are part of the Farm Bill, livestock disaster programs, things like that that farmers are eligible for. And one of the things that we're hearing from Minnesota folks is that if you have a few birds that are die one day and the next day you have 10 birds that are dead and the next day you have 100 birds that are dead, you probably better talk to the state veterinarian right away. Otherwise, you could be, you know, not get the coverage that you should. If you wait until too late, you're in trouble. So the sooner, you know, if you see symptoms, the sooner you talk to your vet or the state vet, the better off you're going to be as a farmer.
And just from Chippewa County, Jerry, we're already at like 400. I mean, not Chippewa, just from Barron County and Chippewa, those farms, those so far four farms, I think, that have been tested positive, the 400,000 birds. I mean, that seems like a huge number. So is there a point, and could you have the magic ball in front of you, to tell us like when it really starts to impact Genio and maybe prices that people pay for their poultry?
Yeah, I think any time. I mean, there's always a planning process of so many birds to come through a facility at a time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a scheduled. They know how fast they can grow, and the feeding schedules are pretty well figured out to approach a certain weight at a certain time of day or a certain time of the year. And so, yeah, any time that gets disrupted, I would think that there's going to be an issue. Now, with a company like Genio that has a larger facilities around, they can start to get into the routine of bringing up the smaller birds to replace. Now, it's going to be whenever those barns are cleared to mm-hmm. be populated again, that's going to be the issue. And like Dr. McGraw said, hopefully the end of the month we can start turning this around, and it's just going to be this 1 month of lapse. So I think there's probably enough birds within the system to try to keep, you know, the consumer maybe won't see a challenge with it. But anytime there's a disruption in any income on a farm, that's always something that's going to be a challenge. And hopefully that's where some of the programs can help, or if it's insurance, they can at least withstand the storm and then get back into the system.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but any idea? I mean, we're talking about five farms now in mm-hmm. Barron County specifically. Any idea how many farms, turkey farms, there are in that region?
Not specifically. I know maybe one of the other gentlemen know, but yeah, it's hard to tell because a lot of these are contract growers where they have the facilities. I mean, I kind of know where they are in Chippewa County, but Barron is so much more, and even into Polk and St. Croix counties, I believe there's barns all over. And they all are operated under that umbrella of the company. So it's difficult to tell exactly how many barns are out there. I think having a confined animal feeding operation permit would be something that I think anyone could probably look up and,
sure.
and find out exactly how many barns are out there.
It's worth looking into. And real quick, I don't want to talk about this for the full hour, but Representative Ron Kind, Democrat from Wisconsin, is calling for increased funding to fight bird flu outbreak, some more money for the USDA in order to fight this. Any thoughts on that? Jim Holt.
Well, that's likely the indemnity program that was mentioned earlier.
Okay.
To actually fight the virus in a large scale would be quite difficult. History has told us that the best solution when you have this outbreak is to euthanize those animals and then go through the sterilization process so that after it passes, you can again get back into the business. But
right.
I think the funds that the congressman is talking about would be the indemnity program.
Okay, because I imagine you can't go around and inoculate, you know, 100,000 birds at a farm. Okay. All right, well, with that, let's take our first break. Listeners, you can give a call at 800-228-5615 if you still have a question or a comment related to bird flu in Barron and Chippewa counties and, you know, throughout the state, of course. The number is 800-228-5615. When we come back, we're going to talk about springtime planting season and how the weather is going, the prices of commodities, you name it. 800-228-5615. This is the West Side. I'm joined by Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Jerry Clark of UW Extension.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs, including Steep & Brew, Marcus Center for the Performing Arts, and The Bold Company. Play a role in the success of WPR. Become a business sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Eau Claire Children's Theater, presenting Cabaret, featuring music like Mad About You and One of These Days, at the Oxford, May 7th through the 9th. Details online at ecct.org.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin. I'm joined by UW Extension Ag Agent for Chippewa and Eau Claire Counties, Jerry Clark. Also joining me, President of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, Jim Holt of Elk Mound, and President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union Board of Directors, Darren Von Ruden of Westby. 800-228-5615. Darren Von Ruden, I'll start with you. We got some rain last night, but I was looking, and still, the U.S. Drought Monitor, it hasn't been updated yet. It was towards the end of April, classified most of western Wisconsin as abnormally dry, less dry south of us in your territory, but generally, was that causing any headaches for farmers, and how big of a deal was that storm we had last night?
Well, to start out with the storm last night, or the rain that we got last night, as a farmer, it's always welcome to see that,
yeah.
Especially after we've had an extended period without some moisture. I think in our area, maybe from our area south a little bit, we've got adequate soil moisture right now. We've actually done probably 40-50% of our corn planting. Most of the oats and barley is down in our area now, but there's still some guys that are trying to get it in. The ground temperature has been the main issue right now. It just hasn't been warming up quite as fast as what farmers would like to see. But I think overall, as far as plantings go, I think we're ahead of schedule as a five-year average anyway.
So what kind of temps are you searching for, or is it dependent on crop?
Dependent on crop. Your oats and barley's small grains will mature or will start growing at a cooler temperature, but corn, you like to see that in the low 50s, mid 50s before that's going to start to grow. So the weather over this weekend with the 70 upper 70s, 80s that we had down by us is certainly going to get that corn that's in the ground starting to grow. And then soybeans is probably a week or two away down by us yet before people are going to get overly excited. Some guys will probably start here in the next week planting soybeans down in our area.
Okay. Jim Holtz, same question to you. You're up in Elk Mound. It's a little farther north than where Darren is farming. And that rain, I mean, the storm was incredibly windy, but it's too early in the season to really do any damage, wasn't it?
I think any crop damage, yes. I guess when you talk about lack of moisture, if we were going to have one season to be a little short in moisture, it might be spring would be the best.
Okay.
Allows us to get through our field work and get things planted. But the much more critical time is probably from mid-June and on when the crop is larger and takes a lot more water. So, yes, we're always concerned about weather, but I think all of us would agree that it's pretty hard to please a farmer on weather because it always could be better.
Yeah, so. I can't remember who it was that told me that, oh, a quarter inch a week or something like that would be...
inch a week.
Inch a week. Okay.
Inch a week
on Saturday night.
that must have been you that mentioned that. So can we look at the, you know, as far as the temperatures and weather, to me, Jerry Clark, it seemed like a pretty mild, pretty decent, maybe a little on the chilly side spring so far. Certainly nothing like coming out of the 13, 14 or the crazy winter.
Right. Yeah, what we've seen so far, one way we kind of track, and it goes kind of with gardeners too, is growing degree days. There's so much heat each day that it gets accumulated, and we kind of track that. And I do have of course, there's an app for everything, but there's an app on my phone that you can actually track, you know, push Eau Claire or whatever city you want, and it'll tell you in generally how many growing degree days you've accumulated. And I just looked at it last night, and we were at about 189, I believe, is about where we're at. And last year at this time, we were at, I think, 88 or something like that.
Yeah.
So you could see the difference, almost twice as warm this mm-hmm. spring as it was last year. And then, of course, you go back to 2012 when we had a really warm spring mm-hmm. and 13 when we had snow on May 2nd or whatever day that was. So,
yeah,
definitely when you start to see warmer, I mean, even though we think the temperatures were cooler, but the dry conditions definitely have helped farmers to be able to get into the fields without – you know, causing the soil compaction, making ruts in the field, or planting, trying to get a crop in desperation like we have the last couple of years just because it was so wet. So even though we're a little on the dry side, like Jim said, it's good to be dry earlier than later. So hopefully this turns around once we get everything planted. But we're off to a really good start.
I've found that farmers tend to be the best meteorologists as well, or at least they think they are. But Darren Van Ruden, I mean, are you looking out? Do you have a gut feeling of what it might be like this summer? Because personally, I think it's going to be a dry, hot summer.
Well, you know, it's some of the old timers that, you know, I listen to, and then reading the Farmer's Almanac too.
Sure.
Once in a while. It certainly, you got to trust what they say once in a while. And one of the things that I've heard is a windy spring always means a warm, dry summer. And we've had plenty of wind down in southern Wisconsin anyway, so, you know, that's a sign that it could be. I hope it's not. You know, we've been struggling with droughts for the last 3-4 years in different parts of the states here, and it'd certainly be nice if we could have an overall state moisture so that all farmers can enjoy a good growing season this year.
Sure. We're talking about agriculture in western Wisconsin. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got some high-ranking officials from the state's two farmers advocacy groups, the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We've also got a UW Extension agriculture expert on the program from Eau Claire and Chippewa counties. 800-228-5615. You can also leave a question or comment on the Westside Facebook page. I want to talk about prices, and I just learned today how to read these darn charts. At least I think I did. Corn prices, they seem to be down significantly over the past year, and I'm not sure how they fluctuate, but corn prices have gone from like $5.20 a bushel down to $3.50 a bushel. And Jim Holt, is that cause for concern? Is that just a normal kind of a fluctuation?
I'm not sure we can say what is a normal fluctuation anymore. Corn prices historically were high the last 3-4 years.
Very high. And
a lot of grain farmers enjoyed that a great deal. And there's a saying that goes that the cure for high prices is high prices, because extended period of higher prices, people will produce more and the price will drop. And similarly, the cure for low prices is low prices. People will reduce production when it doesn't make any sense, and then prices will recover. So markets always change. And yes, it's a concern when you look at the cost to put the crop in the ground and the potential return from it in the fall and in the next winter. So, and yet, each of us that are make our living growing crops and raising livestock know that these markets will change. And so we do have some tools to use to take some of the sting out of it at times.
Like?
Futures markets offer you opportunity to market a crop or a livestock 24/7, 365 days a year. Mm. It many people feel it's an opportunity to take some risk out of the process. Others are reluctant to use it because then by selling now, you might reduce your chance for a higher price later too. So mm-hmm. it's all about managing risk.
Now, Darren Van Roon, I remember speaking of this is it's not off topic, but conservation, land conservation efforts and conservation easements, I think, is what once the prices were so high for corn, you saw a lot of farmers just planting every acre they had. Is it too soon to say whether this will kind of reverse that trend?
Well, you know, and some of those programs aren't available to farmers anymore, too, you know, so that's going to make a difference. You know, if you want to make some money on that land, you're almost, you have to do something with it. You know, the CRP programs, Conservation Reserve Program, there's a lot of acreages that have been taken out of that, and the federal government hasn't renewed a lot of those contracts, and the dollars aren't available to start new contracts, too. So, you know, there's going to be different methods, different ways that farmers are going to have to look at getting an income off of that acreage, and whether that's corn and soybeans or maybe it'll be small grains or else there's getting to be another interesting crop here in Wisconsin. Being we do drink a lot of beer in Wisconsin, hops is starting to take over some acreage in the state, too. So,
any specific region or can it be grown anywhere?
I mostly anywhere. It's lot management. You have to really have the right kind of land for it, and it's an intensively labor-intensive crop, too. It's not something that you can plan on planting 10,000 acres and harvesting it all by yourself, too. It's something that takes planning.
You know, driving through the country once in a while, I'll see the wires, you know, that where the plants climb up there. And I can't help but put on my history nerd cap. And we at WPR, we did a series of stories about the Civil War and our you know, the state's role in that. And we were a wheat. We were like the second largest wheat producer in the country. Then that kind of crashed because farmers didn't rotate and all that. And the farmers experimented with everything they could before they finally latched onto dairy. And one of the things was hops. It was a really big crop back in the 1800s. So anyway, Jerry Clark, I want to talk soybeans as well. And again, I'm just looking at these charts. I'm not sure if this is a normal swing or not, but they're at 977 a bushel, I understand, and that's down from something like 1250 last year this time.
I think it's again very cyclical. That the other thing with soybeans is it's a global. Well, a lot of the markets are. Almost all the markets are global now, but you've got South America being such a big player in soybeans now. Mm. So their harvest season is underway, I believe, right now or wrapping up. And so once we get some numbers on what their harvest was, and it sounded like it was a pretty good one this year, that always puts a little pressure on the soybean prices here in the United States. And so even though Western Wisconsin isn't a major soybean producing area, there's still quite a few soybean acres that are in rotation with corn. So we still end up seeing quite a bit of influence by low prices affecting our farmers here. But some of that pressure does come from South America being such a large soybean-producing area, and mainly Brazil, and I believe you get into Argentina. Yeah,
I had no idea. Now, and with milk... as of Friday, USDA announced that the April Class 3 milk was released at $15.81 per hundredweight, up 25 cents, but still down from last April. Jim Holt, anything to say on that, or is that just kind of... It seems like everything's going down in price. I'm starting to panic. Am I way off base?
Well, I think Jerry touched on it, that these markets are global markets, and a lot of the strength we saw on the dairy side was related to trade, where there was enough demand for dairy products around the world that we exported a lot of dairy products, and the world market just was short enough that the price of dairy went up a lot last year in particular. And I guess you could say we're seeing a correction, and it's maybe more than a correction because – a whole number of scenarios that happened that made our ability to export milk products reduced, and so then the price is dropping very significantly. So right now that $15 number is a tough number for dairy farmers. In contrast, last year they had a really good year.
Why is it a tough number? I mean, are we talking about
the cost of production?
It's higher?
The cost of production, it's different at every farm, but in relative terms, $15 is probably a pretty bare bones as far as those dairy farmers making a profit.
Hmm. And Darren Van Roon, you do organic dairy, don't you?
Yeah. And we're most organic producers nowadays have contracts where their buyers, have a minimum that they're going to pay. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting in really good shape right now. Certainly feel sorry for our neighbors that are suffering in these lower prices, but it's one of those things too that how long can our prices stay high too with the consumer seeing the conventional prices drop, eventually that's going to have an effect on how much organic product they buy too. So, you kind of got to balance that out. Maybe we'll see a good year this year, but next year if conventional prices continue to stay low, organic prices will probably drop too. So
it's just so interesting to me. It's like a roller coaster, and maybe that's something that you are all used to being in farming, but I remember back in 2009, it was just an awful, awful year, and then it got better, and then now it's just all over the place.
Yeah, and some of the new dairy program that's out there, based on insurance and your profit margins, if you bought the largest coverage that you could, those producers are actually getting insurance checks now for the difference in their cost of production. Mm. Most of the dairy farmers aren't. I want to say there's only like 1% of the farmers in the country actually bought that $8 level. So it's going to only affect a few folks like that. But the rest of them are certainly struggling when you're looking at $21, $22 on a average cost of production and the pay price is only in the upper 15s, low 16s. Where's that $4 to $5 going to come from?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about agriculture and kind of an agriculture update. On the west side, we've got Jerry Clark of UW Extension, Jim Holt of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Darren Van Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We'd love to take your calls. The number is 800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. Let us know what you're thinking, and we'll get you on the air. Otherwise, you can post a question or comment on our west side Facebook page if you're feeling a little bashful for going live. 800-228-5615. We'll be back with more West Side in just a bit.
WPR weekends are funny, informative, and unexpected.
Huggies also developed a labor simulator, but so far no man has ever survived it.
Because
it's a boring way. It's a boring word for containers.
It's not at all boring.
Taxonomy. Can we say
yes,
that?
Yes, yes. Okay. This is a story about what goes where and what doesn't go there and what should go there if you were only smarter about it.
Listen on the weekends right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. See the schedule at WPR.org. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio is provided by the Lee Ester News Fellowship, providing early career journalists the opportunity to learn hands-on reporting, editing, and broadcasting in a professional setting as part of the WPR News Department. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System. Patient online services offers secure 24/7 access to health records to view lab results, clinical notes, and medications. MayoClinicHealthSystem.org/online services.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 WRFW River Falls. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about agriculture with some of the top folks with the Wisconsin Farmers Union and Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Also, we've got a UW Extension ag agent on the program. The guests are Jerry Clark of UW Extension, Jim Holt, president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and Darren Van Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union Board of Directors. 800-228-5615 if you'd like to give a call and ask a question. 800-228-5615. Looks like we've got a caller on the line right now. We're going to go straight to them. And Beverly in Barron County, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, I live in Barron County. I live on a farm, but we're not in turkey raising.
Uh-huh.
But I am aware of the fact that these barns that have been built for the turkeys have these large intake and exhaust fans, and they just draw the air in as it is without any filtration system, and exhausting it without a filtration system. And there is no lock area when the workers enter the turkey facility where they could change their clothing and be sure that everything is clean and sterile, that they're not bringing in any things like this turkey problem.
Mm. All right. Well, thanks for the call. Thanks for the comment. 800-228-5615 if anyone else would like to chime in. Jerry Clark, I've only been to it was a Golden Plum facility, and I mean, I don't know if there were filters on the fans or not, but there seems to I had to go through a whole routine before I could go in there. But yeah, any thoughts on Beverly's?
Yeah, I think typically go ahead. Yeah, if there's visitors, I think, coming to these facilities, they definitely have some protocol, I would think, in place that keeps that biosecurity measure at the top of their awareness. But with the workers, you know, an internal worker, I would assume they have a different protocol that the public coming in to visit or a salesperson, whatever it is, would have a different type of protocol that maybe the worker does. As far as the exhaust fans go, I would think it's not that there's probably filters there, but, you know, a virus is something that I don't know that you're ever going to be able to screen that out. And then, again, the contamination isn't so much airborne as it is, again, this direct contact, you know, either through saliva, bird-to-bird contact, getting in on clothing or vehicles, this kind of thing. So having the ventilation blowing through, it's difficult to think that that's going to be the cause of how this is being transferred. It's still probably something that maybe got started through a direct contact or not quite some biosecurity thing that slipped through.
Yeah, like Dr. McGraw said, it's likely not just
blowing
in the breeze.
Yeah, right.
800-228-5615. We've got another caller coming up here. But gentlemen, Darren Von Ruden and Jim Holt, I wanted to start with you. As far as agriculture issues, I mean, I've got some other questions here about state budget and some of the impacts, implements of husbandry we can talk about. But what's top of mind for yourself, Darren Von Ruden, and the Wisconsin Farmers Union?
Well, it's we're always looking for new opportunities for our members, and one of the things that we did at our state convention back in January this year was hosted a solar conference the day before, and we had probably about 150 people that showed up for that, and a lot of interest in it, so we're actually holding a series of solar meetings over the next couple months. The first meeting is going to be May 28th over in Luxembourg, and introducing people to the concept of solar and the benefits that you can have by having solar systems on your, either your house or your farm or an outbuilding or else even out in pastures too. That's certainly a different ways to do that. Then we're having two more meetings the first part of July, one in southern Wisconsin and or southeast Wisconsin, and then another one up in Amory. And those dates haven't been set yet, but we're looking at those two locations for that.
And that's to drive down costs for the farmer also to...
Well, it's another revenue source for the farmer. They've got buildings, rooftops that are, facing south-southwest is your best rooftops to apply them to, or else out in the prairie lands or pastures, too, that you have animals. Animals can run within there, just depending on what type of livestock you have means how high you have to put it off the ground. So there's added cost there for that. But, it's definitely something with the price of solar panels and solar structures has been dropping dramatically over the last 10, 12 years. And so it's actually getting to be cost effective to put these systems in.
And if a panel, I'm just curious, if it wasn't high enough, would a cow happily scratch up against it and maybe bust it?
Yep. You got to make sure that they can't put any pressure on it at all. And sheep and goats are probably about the best animals to have around solar panels because you don't have to go 6-7 feet up in the air to get away from them. So,
Jim Holt, for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and for yourself, what are some of the top issues that you're dealing with?
One of the very active statewide issues would be the implements of husbandry that you referred to.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was a law passed last April to update the way that was dealt with in the state. And it was some revisions to that just recently, again, that were passed and signed. It's a compromise between the need for farmers to get their equipment from up and down the roads in a lot of situations, and the cost that the townships and the counties in the state bear to keeping those roads up. And so we've been very active in finding those right compromise points and how to create the best situation for both sides. So it's been a lot of talk about it. There's, with it being the first year in place, there's some things that have to be adjusted and fixed, and we're all about making those work the best we can.
So what are some of the general rules then? Does it up the weight limits, or does it provide exemptions for certain class of vehicles or certain?
It does both of those things. Prior to this law, you cannot legally operate any equipment on the road if it had a gross vehicle weight over 80,000 or over 20,000 on any one axle. Both of those numbers are increased by about 10% in this new law, but there are exemptions for certain vehicles that are making infrequent passes or one-time passes that can exceed those levels, oftentimes also through a no-fee permit that the township or the county might grant that producer.
Okay. Darren Van Rooten, any thoughts on the implements of husbandry? Because I know that there was some controversy about this bill, I mean, mostly between the towns and the farmers, I would think. But
yeah, you know, the biggest thing was whether those implements are what kind of damage they're going to be doing to the roads, you know, and how is that infrastructure going to be compensated for that damage. You know, farming needs to happen, you know, and so we need to take a look at how can we protect our infrastructure? And I think some of the mechanisms that have been put into place with the new bill will certainly help that. You know, there's different townships and counties are looking at different models of maybe closing off roads at certain times of the day so that farmers can do their business during those hours and not have to worry about some of the traffic that we deal with on a daily basis in transporting our equipment.
I read a story, and this is from a while back, but Clark County Sheriff said he wasn't going to enforce the Implements of Husbandry Law Act 377, which took effect this January. That was from the last session. He said that the weight limits were unrealistic. Any comments on that? Does this bill change what the weight limits were in Act 377 from the previous session, Jim Holt?
Yes, there are changes. Like I said, that 20,000 and 80,000 limit were moved up to 23,000 and 92,000.
Okay.
So the legal limit for farm equipment was changed. And while we advocated for that, we still very much understand that, as Darren mentioned, the cost of maintaining those roads is borne by our townships and our counties in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to keep that in mind, that we need to minimize the impact this equipment has and yet still allow farmers to get their business done. And so it's a compromise. It's a tough spot to find, but we're working at it.
And Jerry Clark, as far as UW Extension, what's top of mind for educators like yourself or just in the ag field, do you see?
Well, I think a couple of things. Currently, we're looking – the USDA is looking at the NRCS 590 Nutrient Management Planning rewrite. So it's different,
okay.
You know, looking at is the UW REX still appropriate to follow as far as their what they're trying to accomplish from a conservation standpoint? We've got different types of tillage equipment out there now. How does that get assessed in terms of a nutrient management plan and keeping soil on the – on the landscape versus having it move off or through erosion into surface waters, causing phosphorus blooms or algae blooms and these kind of things. So I think as that process works its way through, we continue to work directly with farmers in developing nutrient management plans. So we get the correct fertilizer and nutrient rates to the crop based on soil type and slope and all these kind of things. So we're trying to minimize, and farmers do a great job of this, trying to minimize that runoff because you don't want to see your topsoil going down the stream or your nutrients that you've spent money on being washed away. So those are some things that as that rewrite starts to come through, and I don't think there'll be drastic changes, but some of it also gets back to manure management. Again, kind of with the implements of husbandry, more manure haulers, especially the custom applicators, maybe using more hose drag type systems versus tankers running up and down the road, pumping it further, having transfer tanks. You know, these kind of things are all new technologies to maybe take the the stress off roads from having so many tanker loads of manure, or if it's corn silage harvesting, trying to have better tires, these kind of things to keep these trucks, even though they can be licensed for the road, they do less damage with more flotation type tires running back and forth to the farms, these kind of things. So I think all of this new technology, and as that comes along, helping farmers to adapt it or understanding what's out there for different changes that they can make, whether they're a service provider or a farmer themselves, agriculture is always adopting technology. And I think we can figure this out from all these different rules and laws that are coming down to at least make everybody be able to get along and yeah. reduce the damage and yeah. and keep agriculture in a positive light.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got a caller, Stephen Eau Claire. This is probably the last call we'll be able to take, but you never know. Give us a try at 800-228-5615. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? And we lost him. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. I wanted to bring up trade. I know this is something that often gets people all worked up, but President Barack Obama he's pushing what's called a Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade deal with countries in the Asian Pacific area. Also, he wants the ability to fast track other trade deals through Congress, only giving them an up or a down vote. He wouldn't allow them to add amendments to that. So my question, I'll start with Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Will this increase exports from Western Wisconsin? Will this help the farmer down the road?
Well, that's a big question. When you look at what's happening in some of the current trade deals, it certainly has helped exports. But is that turning around and helping the farmers' bottom lines? That's a question that we've always posed to our elected officials. Is this going to be a benefit or a burden to the members of Western Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm.
There's that issue, and then the currency manipulation is another issue in the TPP that we certainly need to address, and we're not so sure that fast track is the right way to do that. We elect our Congress and senators to do a job out in D.C., and what fast track is doing is taking that authority away from them.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that you can have 600 or 535 people negotiating a trade deal, but they should be allowed to know what's going on in that trade deal ahead of a vote, and that fast track really isn't allowing that to happen.
From what I understand, Jim Holt, there is a lot of secrecy, and unless you're a member of Congress, you're not even allowed to have a phone. You definitely can't talk about what the trade deals, what the negotiations are like.
Certainly international trade or negotiations are a difficult process, and as an organization, we have always supported fast-track authority for each of the past several presidents, because we're realistic in knowing that unless you have that in place, you cannot even get through the negotiation process with other countries around the world. And then Congress always does have the right to vote for it or vote against it. And
mm-hmm.
But as Darren mentioned, you cannot expect to have 500 different congressmen negotiating a trade deal, because we have multiple countries and they all have their interests. We talked earlier about some of the impact on commodity prices, and one of the biggest impacts on them has been the reduction in trade, particularly the dairy side. So there's a huge upside for having us have a better opportunity to trade around the world, knowing that food is one of the best things we do in this country. We're really great at food production, and so it's a great strength for us.
Yeah, we did a program maybe a year or two ago, and it really amazed me the number of exports from this region, dairy, soybeans, et cetera. It was really impressive. So now going back closer to the home front, we talked a little bit about nutrient management earlier, and there are these things that have been piloted in the St. Croix River Valley, also in the Red Cedar watershed, farmer-led councils dealing with reducing phosphorus. UW Extension with DNR helped organize these things, and basically sharing best practices in order to reduce the amount of nutrients leaving the farm fields. And in this current budget, Governor Walker is eliminating a number of positions. Two of them would have been in Western Wisconsin. One has to do with the Red Cedar River Partnership, and one would have to do with the farmer-led councils over in St. Croix County area. And conservationists and Lakes Association members are calling on this funding to be restored. Darren Von Rudin, are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yep. The Cedar River watershed, we're actually quite involved in that. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that if you want things to be corrected, funds have to be made available to correct those issues. But the
issue is the tipping fees, from what I understand, for landfills. They're losing revenue at the
Right. You know, and same way with dealing with farmers too. If there's a benefit to a farmer doing a program, mm-hmm. they'll do it. If there's no benefit, they really don't see an opportunity to do that. And so having farmer involvement in that watershed project certainly seems to bring the issues to a head and make sure that we're there. And so, you know, as far as if funding is cut for these programs, you're going to see continued problems within those watersheds on environmental issues.
And Jim Holt, any thoughts on this had to do with some funds from the tipping fees going to what was a non-point kind of a runoff pollution.
Non-point would refer to other than cities, utilities or cities, correct. Yeah. We've been a strong proponent of farmer-led councils. We think those types of situations where farmers sit down and are given the access to information to make an improvement is the best way to deal with a problem. That would be very similar to saying the carrot rather than the stick.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of improvement made, and I think farmers are about improving continually. So I'm pretty optimistic that these farmer-led councils will be positive as we go forward.
All right, gentlemen, we've got a minute, and I'm going to just go round robin as far as what do you think the year will be like for the farmers? Ridiculous tall order. Jerry Clark.
Well, I think if it does stay good weather conditions throughout, I think we had a great start to the planting season. You could see, you know, we get normal somewhat from here on out, a big yield at the end of the year, and prices may stay down just because of so much crop.
Darren Von Rudin.
Pretty much the same thing, I think, weather dependent. Hopefully, you know, for the sake of farmers, we'll have the right weather and everybody can have smiles on Monday mornings.
And Jim Holt.
Well, to be a farmer, you have to be an optimist. You don't spend the kind of money and put seeds in the ground without being an optimist, so that's where I'll hang my hat.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. That was a great discussion. Jim Holt is the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Darren Von Rudin is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union Board of Directors. And Jerry Clark is the UW Extension Ag Agent for Chippewa and Eau Claire Counties. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning in. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.